Welcome, folks, back to Zupi, the Autotelic Mindset podcast. I'm here with Olympian Lewis Irving, aerial ski jumper. Lewis, thanks again for taking the time to jump on board with us here.
No, thanks, Ryan. Thanks for having me. I can't wait to dive into some of these topics that you brought up.
And then remind me, where are you coming from right now? You're not in Canada right now. You're overseas?
No, so we're in Park City, Utah right now. We landed yesterday. Okay. Official training starts tomorrow, and then we get to compete here on Friday at the beautiful Deer Valley Resort.
Nice, nice. Yeah, like I kind of met you before, following along with some of the social stuff, and seems like yourself and a bunch of your other teammates are excited to perform at this venue.
Yeah, it's always a good time. We get a huge crowd out, so we get to put on a show in front of usually around 5,000 people, so you get to kind of feed off that energy too, and it's just an awesome venue.
Awesome. So yeah, let's dive into this. So before we kind of really get into the nitty-gritty, I like just to kind of go through, like, you know, how'd you get involved in this sport, leading up to especially the national level? What drew you to ski jumping particular?
So I kind of had a little bit of a different start than some of my teammates who basically grew up in this sport. I learned how to ski when, basically, as soon as I could walk, my dad threw me on a pair of skis. He was the downhill Paralympic athlete. So he skiing for us as a family was huge growing up. And so I raced for the Sandis Ski Lagere as a kid, did that a bunch. And then when I was around probably 11, 12 years old, or yeah, probably 10 or 11 years old, I did, I was signed up for trampoline courses. So just really active kid, had a lot of energy, and my parents would just always try to find ways to kind of have me channel that energy. So I did trampoline growing up, competed in that for a little bit. And then, when I was about to kind of quit trampolining, I got lucky, and the coach that signed up for that session that we were doing, or for that class at that time, was the dude that was recruiting for the Quebec team for aerials. And so when he learned that I knew how to ski and flip, he just offered to bring me to the ramps and try to, you know, kind of try it out and see if I liked it. And that morning he threw me in with the national team right away, and I just never left, just stayed hooked from there.
Awesome. So being from Canada, was there, as a kid growing up, was there any like pressure from your friends or anything, you know, come play hockey or, you know, other sports that are, you know, little more, let's call them popular per se, growing up? Do you have any pressure to kind of deviate away from like the trampoline and skiing?
I mean, yeah, for sure. A lot of my buddies played hockey. A lot of my buddies actually went and played AAA, played in the junior majors. A few of my buddies went to play pro out in Europe. So obviously with them, they would always be like, nah, why are you going skiing this weekend? You know, come skate with us, come play hockey. And I remember there was one time when I actually went with them, and I took one of their mom's artistic skating skates. And I went out on the ice with them and, you know, just tried to follow along, and it was a good time, but I went back to the ski hill pretty quickly.
It's funny, it's easy for them to say come for a skate, but not so easy for them to jump on board with the skis. And
yeah, exactly.
It's cool when you kind of dive into a sport at a pretty young age and you kind of stick with it, because like there's a lot of social distractions that can kind of pull you in different directions. But when you find something you love at a young age, I think that's what helps you get to where you are today, or plays a big part.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, I still remember it because I played a lot of sports growing up, basketball with the school, and we were a pretty good team, and we get invited to a bunch of tournaments and stuff. And every time I'd miss a few practices to go and train aerials or something, they'd always be like, nah, you should stay here. You know, they really understand.
Yeah.
And I kept telling them that I'd go to the Olympics and I was going to make it to the Olympics one day. And for everyone else, it was just kind of they'd almost brush it off and be like, no way. And then a lot of them, once I actually did, hit me back up and they were like, all right, I guess you were right, man. I guess you knew what you were doing here. And sorry for trying to get you to change your mind a little bit.
That's cool. Having that original dream at such a young age, I think you know, manifesting things and things coming to fruition is a big part of the journey, the process, and how we get to where we are and why we are where we are.
For sure. For sure.
People who are going to listen, you know, they might know a little bit about your sport, but I always like the people who are kind of chiming in and maybe kind of know about it, but want to learn more, kind of walk us through. I know every sport is different with regards to, you know, how it works, the Olympic qualification, how you get on to, you know, the different levels from, you know, competitive to the national level, up and up. Can you maybe explain to people who might not know the process and what that is?
Yeah.
How you get there?
I mean, like for us, it's, so we start off on the provincial circuit, and usually you get kids from anywhere between kind of like 10 to 15 at circuit. Kids that aren't even specialized in aerials yet, you know, like that are just doing either moguls at their home mountain and stuff like that. And an aerials event comes around and they sign up for it. And so that's kind of how it starts. And then once you hit, you know, around 14, 15 years old is where kids usually try to focus in more on one or the other, whether it's slope style, moguls, aerials, you kind of tune in at that point. And then from there, we have this circuit called the NORAM circuit, so the North American circuit. And so you get to travel a little more, come to places like Park City. Lake Placid was a big one for me when I was growing up. And you just, you start to push the tricks a little more, push the degree of difficulty, get to compete against international athletes and see where you stack up there. And then for us, the selection process for the national team is always kind of results based, but also scores based. So you need to be doing a certain trick. And it usually changes depending on how many athletes are coming and pushing up. When I was doing it and when I was coming through that circuit, you had to be doing triple twisting doubles at a certain score to be able to be just eligible for the team. And then once you hit that, then you're on you can make the national team, still do a couple of years of NORAMs usually. And then from there, once you get your degree of difficulty up and you're doing triple backflips, triple twisting, triple backflips, that's kind of when you get your first taste of the World Cup circuit. And then you compete usually in the local World Cup. So anything in North America will kind of bring a bigger group, kind of bring all the up-and-comers to those ones, get them a little bit of experience, get them a taste of what the World Cup scene is like, what it entitles and everything. And from there, we just basically battle out between ourselves and trying to get the best results possible. And because the national team for World Cups only has a certain amount of spots, you know, there's like 6 quota spots that we can send to every World Cup. And right now there's 8 of us that are kind of at the level where we could all be doing World Cups and doing tricks that are pretty competitive. So it gets pretty tight within ourselves. As you know, as much as we're all close and all friends, there's definitely that little aspect of competition within the team. And it's an individual sport, so you still, you know, you're trying to do it and make it for yourself. You can't really bring people along with you the same way you can in a team aspect, right?
Yeah, and we'll get into that too with the individual versus team sport as well, because it's a really good comparison how it works. And I always say, if you're on an individual sport, you still have a big team of people around you, which I like to dive into as well.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So what age were you when you jumped into like the national circuit?
So I was around, I think I was 16 or 17, I hopped on the NORAM tour when I was like 16, and I had a pretty quick progression through the NORAM circuit, because I started in 2010 and I was aiming for the 2018 Olympics right off the bat. So I was definitely pushing really hard tricks wise and everything, trying to make it to that. So I did 3 years on the NORAM circuit. One of them, so my second year, I ended up winning the tour. And it's funny because that's kind of when Chris Lillis and I really started, one of the American guys, that's when we started really going head to head on results. And the first year I won, he finished second. And then the year after that, he won, I finished second. And then we kind of joined the World Cup tour at the same time, have pretty similar results. We got our, you know, I finished third at the Olympics. He won So we've just always been kind of head to head tight, and we're really good friends, and it just makes it even more fun to compete and do all these international events when you got such a good friend pushing along with you.
Yeah, nothing like actually just talking to it with a group of friends the other day. Nothing like good, healthy competition.
Exactly.
Having teams or people, individuals push you and you push them and rising to those occasions. It's funny you mentioned that because I coach a hockey team and that's something we talked about playing against players that are at a certain level and welcoming the challenge to compete with them. So it's cool you alluded to that. I'll have to mention it to them. I was talking to a ski jumper.
For sure. Yeah. Let them know that.
That's cool. And then you kind of alluded to here, you know, right away you were in the mentality of setting a goal for the Olympics. And obviously with the Olympics, it's a 4-year process and goal setting, I think is so huge. And I think it's something we get better at as we grow as people, individuals and athletes and, you know, what works, what doesn't work. I know you've been on the circuit for a while, so maybe explain, you know, what your goal setting process is with regards to the 4-year process, as well as what are some things, you know, you've learned, you might do now that you didn't do before to, you know, create those goals that you set in place.
Yeah. And it, I mean, it's really interesting for us, right? Cause it's on a 4-year process. And Olympic qualification usually starts the year before the Olympics. On top of that, we have world championships that roll around every 2 years, and that's the year before and the year after the games. So that makes it for, you know, a little bit of a higher level event leading up to the Olympics. But yeah, for me, really, I look at it in terms of competition to competition, especially now. And even like growing up, I would just look at what tricks I would need to be able to even potentially qualify for the Olympic team. And then I just try to focus on that. Like I know in 2018, I needed to be doing at least one quadruple twisting triple backflip. So I definitely pushed hard to try to get to that at least the year before the games, just to be able to, you know, get a little experience with that trick and be able to do it at a consistent basis. So yeah, it's really just kind of focusing on, and then most of our training happens in the summer. That's where we learn all the tricks into the water ramp, into the pool, a little bit of a safer environment to be throwing new tricks in. So every summer I sit down with my coach before starting off, usually during physical camp, and we kind of look at what kind of tricks we want to push for, what we think we want to add into the repertoire for the year after, and then go scale back from there. And like, because these tricks are so big and so technical that you got to look at all the different little aspects that go into successfully competing or completing this big trick. So for me, the last Olympics, I added a quintuple twisting triple backflip. So two twists in the first flip, one in the second, two in the third. And yeah, we just broke it all the way down during the summer. And I really like, coming in even before doing triples, I was focusing on getting good double backflips off with the end of that big trick, and then good doubles with the start of that big trick, so that once I got to the triple and wanted to throw that trick, then I already had kind of the start and the finish of it pretty dialed in. And then we just try to get as many numbers as possible off in these, you know, high intensity situations. And that way I just feel more ready once it's time to hit the snow and try this trick for the first time. And usually that's the thing in our sport. We do so much repetition in the summer and do so many numbers. And, you know, like we don't just do a kind of one and done and then, oh, I did it once, I can go throw it on snow. Like that year that I wanted to do quints, I probably did close to 100-150 of them on the water. And then once you do it on snow, you've done so many on the water ramp that you've messed a lot of them up. You did it all. It's not just doing the good ones. The good ones are fun and they're cool, but those aren't the ones that, you know, save your ass a little bit on the snow. You got to be able to mess it up and still complete it properly and still get it around safely. So once I got to snow and I had all those numbers done, and I was jumping good. We picked a good day, weather permitting and everything, and we sent it. And I think I didn't land the first three, landed the fourth and the fifth one I did. And then that was kind of the, and then competed it that weekend in a World Cup for the first time. So that was pretty cool. And everyone's like, well, you know, you only did so few or whatever, and you're competing it already. It's like, yeah, I've only done 5 on snow, but I've done 150 on water. Like, you know what it is. So
yeah,
we just really try to break everything down into this, to the shortest time spans possible, knowing that that's what's going to make it so that that 4-year process, everything just kind of flows through.
What I have with some of the people I talk with, or that I've created, it's called my performance engine. And part of the engine I have, it's enthusiasm. Enthusiasm is just tying your goal, having a goal, but we don't want to get too fixated on that goal, and bringing it back to like that present moment, where we feel and perform our best. Because you have to break it down so much. I think for me, it would help me stay a little bit more present and more of a distraction of the big goal, which I think will.
For sure. Yeah. And like, exactly. That's exactly what we try to do and try to focus on, because I mean, I know for myself personally, I think about the end goal a lot, and I see the big picture a lot. And I tend to get a little bit tied into that. So when I'm able to, with my coach, come back and focus on these little details, it just makes my training sessions way more efficient. And then when I'm in the training session, it's easy for me to, you know, stay in that present moment, stay focused on the little work needed to get there. And then, but usually what happens for me is like, I'll be in the training session focusing, everything's going good. And then as soon as I'm done, my brain just splits and I go straight to that, oh, in 3 years, in 2 years, and I'm already looking so far ahead. And my coach, he laughs at me all the time. He's like, dude, you're freaking out about something that's so far away, and we're doing, like, you're doing all the work. We're going to be fine. We're going to be fine. I always tell him, I know we're going to be fine, but right now I'm not. It's like, it's that balance, right?
I was just going to say, yeah, finding that balance. I mean, in sports, a lot of times we use the expression, you don't want to get too high, you don't want to get too low. You want to find that middle ground, where, you know, you dive into those nice flow states, and you're like, we'll talk about coming up here is controllables and uncontrollables, and what you can control and what you can, and how that can kind of play with the mental side of things. So that's cool. I love that. Yeah, the goal setting, to break it down to the nitty gritty. I like the technical aspect of it. It's so technical, and you have these goals. The big goal, the small goals, that I call stepping stone goals. Visualization, is that something that becomes a big part of what you do? Because it's such muscle memory, but to run these through your head over and over again, like you said, you're doing physical reps into the water, onto the snow, but are there mental reps you do to prepare yourself?
Oh, big time. Big time. I probably, like, again, you know, that Quint, I did 100 to 150 that summer. Physically on the water ramp, but I probably did 10,000 in my head, right? And like, this sport is such a high impact, high risk sport that you can't really do that many numbers every training session. Like for me on water, and I'm probably one of the guys that does a little bit more or bigger sessions on water and gets a little more reps in, just because I like doing it. I keep myself in shape to be able to do that and to be able to get those high volume, high intensity sessions. But even those ones are kind of, it's like, if I'm doing quints and I'm doing triples, I'll probably do anywhere from 6 to 10 jumps in a session, at most. Whereas, you know, it takes so many reps. And if I can do all those sessions in my head and work on that stuff, and we do a lot of visualization and video reviews, so I'll look at my video, see what I want to focus in on, see what I need to work on, see what I need to change a little bit, and then I'll go and I'll do a full visualization session, really keying in on focusing on that specific part of a trick. And then usually by doing that, I come out the next day and I cannot, there's already so much progress, and there's so much there's just already way better than the day before, because I've done 100 reps that night in my head, you know? And yeah, even for me last year, like, because I had a pretty gnarly injury in February where I broke my femur. So I guess after that, it was like, I couldn't jump anymore. I couldn't train. I could like physically, I couldn't walk. But I just did all I do is sit on the couch and just think about it, visualize, put myself in that position and really try to almost feel it more, you know, obviously think about it, see it in my head, but also feel the motions and everything in my body while I'm visualizing and really key into those. And stuff that I wanted to work on that I knew I wanted to, you know, tweak a little bit this summer. I had done so many reps in my head that I showed up that first, you know, those first 2 weeks, the first camp we did on the water ramp, and most of those were already fixed because I had felt it so much that I knew how to fix it, what to do, what to feel.
With regards to this visualization, when was it that you, like, I say these are like just tools you put in your toolbox, right? Your tool belt. When did you start utilizing visualization, or was someone there to help you, you know, can understand how to, you know, properly implement it, and what's your process of doing it before training, during training?
Yeah, I definitely had started fairly early in my career with that because, you know, doing trampoline and everything was something that we kind of already did and already knew. But then when I started skiing, I started working with a mental prep psych, a performance psych. And our first probably year and a half working together was really solely focused on finding efficient and good ways of visualizing. So what I like to do, and I think about it so all the time so much. Like, I'll be walking down the street and I'll be doing my arm movements and my arm swings for my tricks. It looks a little weird, whatever. But then there's every now, probably three or four times a week, I'll sit down and do a more kind of official visualization moment where I'll do what I like to do is do all my correctives and physio exercises. Get my body feeling right. And then after that, I'll just kind of lay on my yoga mat, close my eyes, try to get into a really calm headspace, and then go through a training session in my head and, you know, start that first jump and then just go through it. And then I usually do two or three training sessions. And yeah, I do it like here, Deer Valley. I've been on this hill so much that I know what it looks like. I know what the lap times are like. I know all of that. And I try to really visualize it in the exact space that I'm going to be in. I like every site we go to, the coaches get out there earlier and they go and shape the jumps, get everything ready for our first day of training. And every time my coach, he sends me a video of the actual in run and the jump itself, and then a video of the landing hill. So I really have that exact picture in my head. And then when I'm visualizing myself on that exact site, not just on any random site. And then what I also like to do was, like, for example, we had our national championships last week, and I was struggling a little bit at the beginning of the season with how I wanted to do my tricks and wanting to flip at the right pace and everything. And I remember that last year on that site that we had nationals at, I competed really well, had great events, had a great training camp leading up to it. So I went back and in my head found those jumps on that site that felt good with the timings of everything, and, you know, just tried to put myself back into that, those days last year.
Yeah.
And then had a full session of that, came back the next day, and it was like night and day difference of how my jumping was. It was crazy.
And I think that as high performance athletes, and what can be the difference between, you know, a competitive versus high performance is being in tune with your mind, body, and, you know, your energy, your soul, your spirit, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
I think that's part of, that's the next, can be the next jumper, the difference between the two levels. I find it, you know, the quicker, and they always say make mistakes quick so you can learn from them, right? So the quicker,
yeah.
Or talk to people that can give you some insights, you know, the further you can kind of propel your training and your career. But kind of, yeah, going back to your visualization, what you're alluding to is, and I always try to tell people, is like, you want to be as specific as possible. Like you're saying, like, yeah, you have the track, but you have, you know, what's the air temperature? You know, you're going through your
sense,
right? Your feel, yep. Your touch, your taste, whatever, depending on your sport, but you try to bring that all encompassing. And I think that's what you're kind of alluding to. And the more you can bring in, the more powerful it becomes, I always say.
Yeah, and that's exactly what my performance like and I worked on at first was like, yeah, okay, you were good at visualizing or you can see it well in your head, but what do you feel on your skin right now? What's that taste in your mouth when you're doing this? And it's crazy because I've done so much of that and I think about it like consciously when I'm on the hill sometimes so that I can go back to it. And like, obviously some days things happen that they're easier to key back into,
yeah,
because something major happened or whatever, but I can, and I talked about this recently with my coach and I was like, I can go back to that jump where I messed up last year and broke my leg and go back to the top of the in run. I remember what I was feeling in my body at that point. I can even remember what I was tasting in my mouth. I can remember the smell of the dude standing because he was really stinky. So I can remember, like, I still have all those dirt, like, so ingrained in my head, obviously, because it was a pretty traumatic event or whatever.
Yeah.
But still, it's like, yeah, it's all part of it. And it all makes that visualization way more efficient at the end.
Now, we're gonna talk about your injury in a bit, but just kind of going off of that, is that a good thing or a bad thing with regards to having such a dramatic event take place that you're so in tune with that moment? Or is that something maybe as an athlete you'd like to erase? And I mean, there's no right or wrong answer to this, but for you, now that you've recovered and are back in it, is it something that mm-hmm. has served you well that you remember all this, or is it something that maybe you have to work on to eliminate so, you know, fears don't seep in when you're jumping?
Yeah, I mean, I think as a human, I'd like to forget that one and just not have it in my head anymore and not remember it. But as an athlete, as a competitor, I don't mind it. And the whole fear aspect of it, obviously, I mean, what we do is scary. Injuries removed or anything, right? It's just it's a high risk, so it's scary for sure. So for me personally, there was definitely moments this summer where I felt that it was a little harder than other years just because of what had happened and what that whole event. But I think also that once, but then it just made the feeling of doing it again and you know, surpassing that just way more gratifying, and it felt so much better after. And once I had done it, it just like, yeah, I remembered the crash and everything, but I also remembered all the other days when I had, you know, good days, everything went well, everything went according to plan. And, you know, I had way more good days than bad days, way more good jumps than crashes. And just, you know, it's like at the end of the day, my brain is, it'll quickly go and remember the bad ones. But being able to consciously go and take it from the bad ones and bring it to the good jumps and the good days and remembering that there's way more of those is just gives me confidence at the end of the day that I can get over that and get what I want.
And that kind of brings us back, like we were saying before, like just being in the present moment,
mm-hmm.
Right? When things like this happen or, you know, trick your mind. Yes, I've gone through this, but I've had these moments too. And interviewing the Olympic athletes, what I've really reflected on after a lot of these conversations and talking about flow state and being in the zone, being present is, and you can chime in after I kind of share my thoughts, is you have the big goal, the gold medal, the Olympics, but at the end of the day, this is a 4-year process, and like 4 years, it goes by quick, but it's a long time. And you might do multiple Olympics. And I find the athletes, when they're talking, you guys chase moments, you know, whether it's overcoming an injury, like you said, that big run, so much gratitude, so much good feeling. You win a big competition, you land a trick, and, you know, all the adrenaline, dopamine, all the feel-good chemicals rush through your body. And I think that's what gets you guys through 4 years, or, you know, helps you reach the Olympic dream, is just chasing moments of pure flow and being present. So
you hit the nail on the head right there, because as much as, you know, I've had good results, I've got multiple World Cup medals and Olympic medal and all that, at the end of the day, what I remember the most is those moments, not the actual medal. And even when I'm in the competition doing the event, and when I do good, when I end up with a medal at the end, end up on the podium or whatever, usually it's not even, it's a feeling of relief almost, you know. Oh, it's not even like the jump itself, the trick, the success of the trick brings me all the happiness, brings me all that feel good stuff. Whereas the medal itself, I'm just like, oh, okay, I did what I was supposed to do. Like I did my job here. It's like, people think that the medal is what makes me the happiest, but no, it's the whole, it's what I did to get that medal that really, that sinks in and that I remember the most. Like that Olympic medal, yeah, that was cool. But I remember the things that pop up in my head are more the conversation that me and my teammate had at the top of the in run right before going, the lead up to those games and the lead up to that, you know, that specific jump. I remember looking down at the other competitors from the top and seeing kind of what I needed to do to win. I remember all those little key moments of that day way more than standing on the podium and being like, okay, cool, I got this piece of hardware, right? Like,
and like, that's why I love doing what, you know, having these conversations and kind of like behind the scenes, so to speak. And I mean, with social media, what the world projects at us with regards to results, right? Mm-hmm. As an athlete, sometimes we can get caught up in that, but also spectators, right? Like, he missed a jump. He came second, or he fell, or whatever sport it is. Mm-hmm. You get so caught up in results and times, but people don't understand, you know, process of what these athlete has gone through to get where they need to go. And sometimes a lot, like you'll know as well, is like, sometimes you're competing and you're not at 100%. I think it's rare to be at 100%. If you are, it's just a miracle. So people don't understand behind the scenes what you've gone through emotionally, physically, to, you know, put yourself in a position to compete at this high level.
But I mean, I think as athletes, we're kind of guilty of that too, right? Because we'll, you know, going back to social media and everything, like we'll make the post and we'll talk about it once we, you know, when we get that good result, when we get that medal, and when you have a good day, but you didn't podium or you didn't medal, then it's like, we don't talk about it as much. We do, but we don't go as into depth as to why we're happy. So it's like, it's hard for people to kind of get that grasp, because we're not the best at sharing all that process and telling, you know, letting everyone know what we're going through. And I mean, we try to hide it too, right? Like we're never feeling 100%. We're always hurting a little bit. There's always something. But when someone asks me, how you feel, and you ready for this? Yep, always. Yep, I'm ready. Yeah. I'm good. You feeling good? Yes, good. Yes. Like, I'm not going to tell them that my ribs tweaked or that I can't breathe properly right now because of whatever, you know. It's like, we pretend that we're invincible all the time.
And it's good to see both sides when the right opportunities present yourself and allow you to share. And like stuff like on a podcast, mm-hmm. then obviously being open to it is a big part of it too. So I totally agree. Okay, so now that we've kind of, you know, talked about, you know, your 4-year process, some of the tools, techniques you use to get you to, you know, creating these moments, as we're talking about, what's your process with regards to, I just want to read kind of what you sent me, because I liked what you said, letting your brain wander, not trying to control everything, getting into the zone at the right moments and trusting your preparation. So talk to us about, what does that mean to have your brain wander and getting into the zones at the right moment at the right time? Explain to us what that means for you and how do you get to those zones?
Yeah, so I mean, growing up, especially younger, competing when I was younger, I used to always, you know, try to focus on the right things all the time and just think about the perfect jump and only the perfect jump and everything. But I realized that that just takes so much energy. And we go through long days that are high stress, high intensity. Like, we just had nationals and I had my heart rate watch on the whole time. And I was averaging, like, from the first training jump to the end of the day, I was sitting at about 145 beats per minute for that the whole day. So, like, it's already crazy. You know, I'm already going to be in that super high, super intense mind state. So for me to try to control my thoughts at every single moment, I just realized that it would drain so much energy out of me, and it would make me so tired that I get to the end and then I, like, yeah, I just couldn't do it and couldn't perform the way I wanted. And one of my teammates kind of had alluded to that when I was younger, during closer to 2018 games, and he was telling me how he would see his thoughts, especially on game day and on in the competition setting. He would almost see it like a train going by, you know, like a train is massive. You can't stop it. You know, it's just going to go by. And if you try to control that and try to stop the train, you're going to waste so much energy. Whereas if you just see those thoughts as, you know, they're on the train wagon and you just see them flow, you know, like just drive on by and keep going, and then they leave, and that train is so long that you're at something else. So I try to think about that a lot. And, you know, sometimes I'll have negative thoughts come in, or, you know, things that it's like, I shouldn't be thinking about messing up right now or crashing. But again, I'm like, well, I guess this is what my brain wants to think about. I'm just going to let it and it'll pass. Whereas if I try to control it too much, then I stay hooked on this thought that I'm trying to not think about. I usually try to do that. And then, you know, once I'm in the gate, or it's the athlete before me, and then I'll come kind of closer to where I'm going to start, and I stand in there and I stare at the jump. That's where I try to, you know, try to focus more, bring it in a little more, focus on that at present, be in the present mind state. Usually what I like to do is just kind of stand there, close my eyes for a second, and just feel, you know, feel how my fingers feel in the inside of my gloves, feel how my toes feel in the inside of my boots, feel how my suit's sitting on my body. And then I'll open my eyes and just kind of look at what I'm seeing. And then I say it out loud, and I'll just say, okay, I see a green tree. There's a dude in a yellow jacket skiing by. And then usually by after that minute, 30 seconds kind of thing, then when I look at the jump again, I'm 100% here. You know, I'm not, my brain has been just, it's so keyed in on everything inside that I can't be, it's not like locked into what I don't want to be thinking about.
And
I just realized that trying to control my thoughts too much was almost worse and would take so much energy out of me. And I'm someone who, like, I love competing, and that's probably my favorite aspect of everything we do, is just to be in that competition setting, game day, you know, just going at it and trying to perform, put on a show. And so I know that for me, I'm going to be really high, really intense. And if I try to bring myself down for the whole day, it doesn't work. And my coach, you know, he tells me a lot. He's like, all right, dude, you're here right now, which is fine. I need you here before you go, and then it's all good. And after doing it for so long, I just found that, oh, I can let myself be all the way up here between training jumps and mess, like, laugh with my homies, be loud, be like just kind of vibing through the whole thing. And then when I hop in the gate, then it's easier for me to narrow it down. Whereas if I try to keep it narrow for 3 hours, then it doesn't work. Right.
I love the analogy of the train. That makes sense. If people are struggling with that, and I can, you raise my hand to have negative thoughts and try to be like, okay, what can I do to make this better? What, you know, and just overthink the thought itself. Definitely guilty for that. So sharing that training analogy, I'm definitely going to be more conscious of when a thought comes in my head, just my daily routine. And it's important that people who, you know, want to inspire to be high performance athletes, and even just regular people, is, yeah, our energy levels, something that's, you know, being more talked about now, and people are more open to it, but it's a thing, right? Like if you're, I see there's good stresses and bad stresses. Like you said, you love to compete, and competing can make someone stressed, as in it's bad, or you embrace it and it's good. But like you said, in certain moments, you got to make sure the level is where you want it to be, because it can overtake you from, you know, having a good performance or a bad performance, regardless of all the training, all the reps put in.
Exactly.
Burn intact, or your energy levels are, there goes your run, your jump, whatever it may be, just snap of a finger, so to speak. So when people are like, yeah, listening and hearing that, like, this is a thing, like, we have to be conscious and unconscious of where our thoughts are and how we're feeling physically and mentally. So going to your jump, so once you're in the gate, you know, you now take off, hopefully enter that flow state, everything just disappears. Or when you're going down, and because there's so much to the trick, are you still thinking, or is it just, it's wiped out and just ever the body?
I feel like there's, and this is something that a lot of people in our sport seem to say, like you're standing at the top and all these thoughts just come through, and it just, like, it gets screwed. Your brain starts going and it's crazy. The good and the bad, like everything. But usually, and I've talked about this with a lot of my competitors, and we all seem to say the same thing. As soon as we hop turn and start skiing towards that jump, everything, just the whole world stops. Like nothing else exists. And I mean, part of it is because you're skiing 70 kilometers an hour into a 4.5 meter wall. But like, you can't really be, like, your brain is like, okay, I'm locked into this thing right now. But yeah, definitely by then, and my best jumps, my best results, whether it's competition or training, my best jumps happen when I'm just skiing in and everything just happens. If I'm trying to think and like tell myself, okay, stand up here, kick your feet, drop your arm, if I think of that consciously, it's too late, because everything happens so fast that I can't even process all the other information that fast. So it has to just happen 100% naturally. And just the nature of the sport kind of helps to key that in. That's why I try to, because I know that part's going to happen naturally and organically, I try to extend it a little more into that, you know, minute where I'm standing in the gate waiting for my coach to put his hand up and clear me and tell me that we're ready to go and that I can go. That way it's just easier for my mind to already be in that state, other than, you know, already be trailing thoughts, and then, oh boy, okay, we're going now, you know, like.
Yeah, like you said, things happen so quick. And I think as high performance athletes, you know, to get into this flow state where we feel and perform our best, you know, the elite of the elite, you know, they can, like you're saying, they can tap into it sooner and longer than, you know, maybe the next guy. Or, and it, every competition is different, right? Some days, you know, you're locked in because everything is going. Other days, it just doesn't happen for whatever reasons those are. But like you said, it's happened so quick and you can jump in and out very quickly, but the quicker you get into it when you want to, and the longer you can stay into it, obviously amplifies the experience, and hopefully the result will match the way you're feeling. Obviously that's not always the case, but you're assuming it will because you're feeling the best in those moments. So trying to tap into that, I call it flow state, but it's just being in the zone, as most of us refer to.
Yeah, and like I feel, for me a lot too, after doing it for so long and having so much experience, like you said, like there's some days that it just happens, it's easier, other days that it's not. But for me, a big part is, you know, remembering that even if I'm not 100% in the zone, or I'm not feeling 100%, you know, if I would want my brain to be more focused on certain things or whatever right now, then that's okay. You know, I've stopped trying to be in that exact same mind state all the time, because some days you just can't. And the days that I can't, well, that's like I can still perform even in more foggy mindset or whatever, and I've had good results in those days. And again, it's easy for me to go back and be like, see, remember that time when you were thinking about all these other things, you had all these things going on in your life and you couldn't focus in on your competition jump or whatever, and you still got it done? Then yeah, see, dude, you're fine, just chill, don't waste energy here trying to channel, like, yeah. Just let things happen naturally. Trust the preparation, trust the work you've done. Go back to all those stepping stones, make sure that all the, remember that all the work's been done, you're good. Just go out and enjoy the moment right now.
And, it's nice to hear you talk about it. And it seems when we're having a conversation about this, people have to know it seems so easy, but like you said, you have years of experience and reps,
yep,
and different things that are going on in your life, sports related, out social related, whatever it may be, to get you to these moments. It's a lot more difficult than what we're just talking about. So that people know that you still have, contact. It's easy. Everyone would do it.
In the making,
yeah, for sure. Awesome. Okay, so now I want to kind of still sticking on this kind of this track of the mental side of things. All sports, more so yours with regards to risk, like injuries, it's inevitable. Different severities, but it's kind of bound to happen based on the risk you guys are taking. And I want to kind of talk about your most recent injury, because that was that was a pretty big injury, and is obviously recent. Just briefly, maybe you kind of alluded to it, maybe just what happened, like you said, you broke your femur, maybe just explain that. But also I want to talk about making a recovery, or what's going through your head. You've done something really bad. You're going to go in the hospital. What are the thoughts going through your head? Am I ever going to ski again? Am I ever going to walk again? The more negative and fearful thoughts.
Yeah.
And then obviously coming out of the injury, and recovering and jumping back into the circuit.
Yeah. I mean, so it was here in Deer Valley last year. So we're going back to that site tomorrow and do it again. but what happened was I came up into the jump a little hot, a little faster than I probably would have wanted. And then for anyone who's already skied, you probably had that happen to you before, where call it the snow snake, where your ski just kind of catches in the snow something and your ski just doesn't track the way you were expecting it to. And that happened to me probably 3-4 feet in front of the kicker. And so I lost my balance kind of backwards, and I ended up doing 3.5 flips and diving into the landing hill. I guess with the force, the rotation and everything, my leg just kind of just snapped. I knew right away. My coach was already running down to me in the landing hill. You see it on the video. I'm in the air. He's already going, booking it. Like, he knows that this isn't going to go well. And so I landed, rolled to my back, grabbed my leg immediately. And I remember I looked at him and I was like, dude, I broke my leg. And, from there was a trip straight to the hospital, x-rays, make sure everything else was kind of okay. No other major injuries, other than that. And, I remember laying there, and immediately I was like wiggling my toes, even my foot. And it was the first time I broke a bone. I remember as a kid, every time someone would break their arm or something, they were like, oh, can you move your hand? And then they move their hand, like, oh, you're fine. So I was moving my toes. I was like, oh, maybe it's not broken. And I have my toes.
No, I'm good.
But no, obviously that didn't have any, it wasn't related at all. But I got carted off, put on the stretcher, brought to the ambulance, and our physio was with me. And I remember I just looked at her and I said, the first thing I told her was that, yeah, I'll be back next year. So right away I was thinking about, I was trying to convince myself that it wasn't as bad as it was. And even when the paramedics asked me what my pain level was at, I kind of thought about it. And I was like, oh, maybe a 5 or a 6. And they looked at me like I was crazy. So I upped it to a 7. But I guess for me, it was my way of just kind of being like, you know, convincing myself that it wasn't as bad as it was. And I feel like if I would have said that it was a 10, like it probably was, then it would have been harder for me to just kind of stay calm and stay, you know, because at that point I couldn't freak out. You know, it was like there was so much going on that I had to just keep breathing and just try to stay as calm as I could. So, and then, yeah, we got to the hospital and they ran a bunch of tests, did everything they needed to. And right away, the surgeon came to see me and he told me that, you know, he told me what they were going to do surgery wise, put a nail in my leg, anchor it in and everything. And he told me, and then, yeah, he told me that everything else, spine, neck, everything else was totally fine. I didn't hurt anything else. So that already was a huge, huge relief, you know, knowing that I was going to be okay in that sense. And then he told me that he was going to put in, you know, kind of the biggest nail that he could and anchor it the biggest that he could. Cause he's like, you're probably going to want to go jump on this thing again. Right. And I was like, yes. Okay. So we're going to give you something that's really solid. And then from there, I mean, luckily I have this amazing team of medical professionals around me, and right away they were already, I was in surgery and they were already talking about my recovery process, what it would entail, how long it would be, what we would need to do, kind of thing, all the steps of it. And for me, obviously I knew the end goal was to come back and jump, but for them to kind of lay out that whole plan for me just helped me, again, like focus into those little wins, you know, get back. The first win was to get back home. Once I was home, then it was, all right, can I start walking on this without limping? What do I need to do to be able to do that? And just to kind of really focus in on all those little tiny steps of recovery, and not just like the end goal was still so far away at that point, and being able to jump was so far away that I feel like if I would have just been thinking about that, it would have been way harder in terms of like staying positive, recovering and everything. So I got back home. I was probably 3 weeks on the couch. And then I got new x-rays done and everything was showing really good signs of recovery. And from there, the doctor basically told me, he's like, well, right, the next step is basically whatever you can handle pain wise, that's where your limit is. Okay. You could do everything up to there. And then
yes,
I remember my coach was with me and he looked at the doctor like, are you you're telling this to this guy? Like, are you really? Oh my God. Okay. So from there, as soon as he told me that we were good to go, I was like, you know, I ditched the walker, grabbed a cane instead. And my girlfriend was freaking out. She's like, are you sure you should be doing this? And I was like, doctor said, if it doesn't hurt that bad, I could do it. The trainer that I'm working with, that I've been working, like we've been working together for 12 years now. So he knows me, I know him, I trust him fully. So whenever we'd be in the gym and he, you know, change my program a little bit, add a few different nuances or anything, that was just, it's so much confidence. And it made me, you know, it just showed me that we were moving along and that stuff was recovering well. It was definitely a hard time and like struggle with the whole, you know, because my teammates were out, they were competing and I had to stay home and watch them from the TV. And that was really hard. But then I'd use that as fuel to, you know, get back in the gym and get myself in a position where I'd be able to go back and train in the summer and get those reps in, right?
Well, it's quite the process. And I mean, it's funny, it's a big injury, but it's your experience and obviously having a good team around you that has kind of, you know, led to this great recovery. And through our conversation from start to finish, it's kind of like a full story, because like you said, you're now end with your injury and you're right where it happened. And so it's kind of a cool little full circle and kind of a cool opportunity for me to be talking to you on this day while you're here. Before we kind of like wrap things up, I like to just do a little, spit off a couple words and you kind of tell me What comes to mind, whether it's a thought or just a word, and I just run you through about seven or eight words. So I'll just demand you say whatever comes. And I like to kind of have this as one of the little ending thing I do with the athletes and just things we talked about. So here we go. Goal setting.
Small, very small.
Sport culture.
Oh, this is like a family in here.
Mental health.
Very important and not to be looked over.
Olympian athlete.
The whole process is what really matters.
Social responsibility.
Yeah, just being open with what we go through and being available for people.
Funding and sponsorship.
As an amateur athlete, it's harder than people think, and we need all the support we can get.
And then last one, your mindset, the mental game.
Yeah, just staying positive and having fun and enjoying every single moment that we live through.
Awesome. And that's kind of wraps us up there. So Lewis, I appreciate it. I mean, I think I could talk to you for another couple hours. I enjoyed it. I don't want to keep you as well. But I appreciate you, like you said, being open, sharing some of your tools, techniques that has brought you success and hopefully continued success. And I look forward to watching you continue to represent Team Canada. Very excited as your season, you're right in the thick of it right now. So I'll be following along. So appreciate you coming on board and chatting.
Oh, thank you.